So the concept of a non-pegged stable asset and the comparison always going to other stable assets, and especially at the early days, there were a lot of concerns in how similar we are to the mechanics of Luna. So often we had to explain how different we actually are, and that we were not exposed to the same type of risks. So I think that was, has been up till now, I think, the main point of confusion, the non-pegged aspect of the protocol.
Welcome to the Ocean Missions Campfire Podcast, where we discuss Ocean Protocol, Web3 and blockchain data. Before we get started with today's interview, I'd like to quickly thank the Ocean Protocol Ambassadors Program for sponsoring this podcast. They sponsor a number of community outreach initiatives, and if you'd like to get involved or learn more, just follow the link in the show notes. Hey, well, thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to be discussing H2O, which is a data-backed stable asset. You'll be learning all about what that actually means. And for today's interview, we're going to be speaking with Sebastian and Marek from H2O. So welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thanks, pleasure to be here.
So I just wanted to kick off, and maybe Sebastian, we start with you. If you could just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you found yourself in the wonderful world of Web3.
For sure. So yeah, Scott, first of all, I wanted to thank you for having us and inviting us to the interview. It has been long in the makings, I would say. So yeah, as you just mentioned, I go by Sebastian. And I basically come from a long background in financial institutions, so in the financial industry, mainly banking and insurances, where my main occupation was leading the implementation of data-driven initiatives such as process automation, digitalization of financial processes, and I was also pioneering their blockchain initiatives. But at the same time, I found myself fascinated by the blockchain industry since 2016, I believe, 2017, when I started to get involved and to really dig into the rabbit hole. And quickly I found myself pretty much taking too much time into crypto, so I decided to find a way to get closer involved, and that's how I got in touch with Marek and Sammy and the New Order. And one thing led to the other, and basically my passion for data brought me all the way to H2O.
Very cool. And Marek, if we could just hear how you found yourself into the Web3 space.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a bit of a long, winding story, but, you know, I'll try to be brief. I actually started following, you know, Bitcoin and crypto like back in like 2008, 2009. And, you know, when I read about it on Slashdot, I was like, yeah, magic internet money. I don't know if this is really going to take off, right? So, like, you know, years passed before, you know, I really started seriously looking at it, but I noticed that, you know, it kind of wasn't going away, right? And then one thing led to another. I'm sort of a recovering academic now, but, you know, back in 2015, I was essentially teaching data science in Toronto, Canada. And there I co-founded Canada's first academic blockchain research lab at the Schulich School of Business. Long story short, eventually I left academia to pursue startups and things in the industry. After my first startup was sold for the technology, I went to go work with Block Science, along with some brilliant people, including Michael Zargum over there. And Block Science is, you know, sort of like a consultancy that does token engineering work, mechanism design for, you know, many of the top 100 projects, you know, top crypto projects. Eventually, I moved on from Block Science to help co-found New Order, which is an incubation DAO. And, you know, it's sort of like I would call it an experiment in the venture space, sort of like an evolution of the venture studio. And what New Order does is it helps to incubate and spin out, I would say, very innovative DeFi protocols. So I'd always been a believer since, you know, maybe around like 2010, 2011 in data as an emerging asset class, right? And then, you know, through sort of our connections at New Order, we actually got to talking with Ocean on this idea of H2O, a stable asset that would be eventually backed by data, sort of, you know, kind of came about. And we actually met Sebastian through New Order. Really liked sort of like, you know, the cut of his jib. Good vibes coming from Sebastian. Clearly a, you know, I would say an innovator and a leader in the space. And so, yeah, that's sort of how I got involved and in a roundabout way how H2O was born.
Very cool. And obviously there's a common thread there between the two of you around data, which is obviously important, as we'll soon learn. For those who have never heard of H2O before or never heard of the concept of a data-backed stable asset, if you could just give us a bit of a quick kind of overview of what H2O actually is.
So yeah, as you say, like data-backed, that's basically not yet where we are as of today, but that's, let's say, like the main mission of H2O. So H2O as of today is a non-pegged stable asset for the Web3 data economy. So we pretty much start off our journey with our friends at Ocean, which, I mean, was an obvious choice as Ocean is the closest that we have in the Web3 space as proxy to the value of data. So that's why it was more than an obvious choice. So H2O, as I said, is an over-collateralized stable asset. We pretty much exercise the mechanics of Reflexer, Rai. So we are very close to Rai and MakerDAO in terms of mechanism and how the protocol functions. But in comparison to Rai, that is backed by ETH, H2O is backed by Ocean. So in that regard, we can perhaps say that we are kind of on the road to data backed, right? And we also recently became available as a base token for the Ocean Marketplace. So as of now, people can also value their data on the marketplace utilizing H2O and benefiting from a stable pricing and predictive revenue, right? So we're positioning ourselves in a way that we can serve the data economy with a stable, let's say, medium of exchange and union of account for data marketplaces, and with the aim of eventually becoming also backed by actual data.
Okay, very cool. I know the idea of a stable asset inside of the Ocean Market ecosystem is definitely very important. You know, having the fluctuating price of Ocean when you're trying to price a data asset, and then that sort of USD value amount is moving around a bit. You know, being able to stabilize that is pretty important. So in terms of stable assets, right, I think the year 2022 probably hasn't been the best year in terms of the discontinuation of the more recent bull run, and then also there's a lot of coverage and activity around the Terra USD depegging and so on. And so I was wondering if the sort of under the kind of overall umbrella of crypto-based stable assets, whether or not you can sort of start to explain to us how this concept of a data-backed stable asset can start to work inside of this Web3 ecosystem. Now, I know you mentioned that it's not necessarily data-backed as yet, and you know, you're more than welcome to either talk about how things are currently set up or maybe more about what you're working towards in terms of the fundamental concepts that is essentially going to keep this non-peg token at some form of stable value over time.
So a few things. Indeed, a few unfortunate events have led to kind of a shady light onto stable coins. And in that regard, H2O is very different from other stable assets in the sense that we are not pegged to fiat currency, that for starters, and it's also an over-collateralized protocol. So as you might have followed, after the collapse of Luna Terra, there was also a very bullish narrative towards protocols such as Rai and Maker. Although they're not very capital efficient, it just has historically proven to be a superior model. On the other hand, to touch on what you said about data-backed, we really see that as one of the major strengths of our protocol and what we are trying to achieve with it. Because as a team, we really strongly believe, and I think yourself included, that data is a very strong asset that has intrinsic value. So it has underlying value that can be measured, right? So it has to be possible to create an asset that uses that intrinsic value of data as an underlying collateral, right? So we really see a strength into that, and we're looking very, very much forward on how the ecosystem evolves. On the other hand, what I can maybe add to that, or Marek, maybe if you want to dive a bit in the specifics of the mechanics on how the H2O protocol differs from other stable assets, let's say, in a technical way, right?
Yeah, for sure. I can dive, you know, a little bit deeper into that. When you have something like a pegged stable coin, right, that's maybe backed, in theory, 100% backed with, you know, with like, let's say US dollars, for example, right? You know, there's a lot of different sort of challenges there, right? Like, you know, people are always questioning, let's say, like the reserves of USDT, for example. I think, you know, even more recently, we saw some like kind of fear spreading across the market with coins like USDC having to impose sanctions on users, whether that was justifiable or not. I mean, I think that's the courts will resolve that in due course, right? But yeah, we actually have some really cool mechanics that make H2O, I would say, like kind of much more decentralized than those other models. What's actually super cool about it is H2O being a fork of a Reflexer's Rai protocol uses a, I would say, like an innovative mechanism in that it has what's called a PID controller, which stands for Proportional Integral Derivative Controller, which is a very popular type of control system that has been used widely in the engineering space for many different applications for decades, right? It keeps airplanes in the sky, well, you know, lands rockets on the moon, these sort of things. And we were watching like Rai and other stablecoin, you know, stable asset, whatever we want to call that, mechanisms for some time, including like we considered Liquidy. But we ended up landing on Rai because we sort of looked at its performance history over its lifetime. We saw that, you know, even though the price of ETH fluctuated wildly over Rai's lifetime, the Rai stable asset was able to maintain, you know, a fairly kind of constant price level, right? So the way that the PID controller works just intuitively is, you know, whatever the price is currently at, the PID controller adjusts the redemption rate in such a way that it incentivizes independent actors, much like the way the MakerDAO works, right, to either, you know, mint more H2O or to redeem H2O. And yeah, as Sebastian alluded to in our roadmap, much like in the same way that MakerDAO went from single asset DAI to multi-collateral DAI, which, you know, we just call DAI now, you know, H2O will also go through a sort of, you know, upgrade to use multiple types of collateral, probably like later this year or Q1 next year. And then, you know, we're watching the data economy right now. And, you know, we're sort of watching closely to find out which kind of, you know, data assets sort of have the most, let's say, like longevity and develop like, you know, the deepest liquidity and volume and things like that when we're going to be choosing the data assets that will go into backing H2O, you know, later in the roadmap.
Yeah, look, it's actually an incredibly powerful concept, really, isn't it? Because, you know, these stable assets that are backed by, for example, the US dollar, you know, there's a sort of one-to-one interaction going on there. And, you know, the kind of visions and promises of crypto and Web3 is all around this like entirely new decentralized distributed financial system. And without a quality stable asset, you know, it's essentially fundamental to the ecosystem, you know, prior to there even just being these sort of USD-backed stable assets in the crypto ecosystem. It was a completely different place, and as soon as they came along, they kind of enabled a whole additional kind of innovation, additional adoption from a number of people. So cracking that decentralized distributed stable asset mechanism inside of this ecosystem is obviously a super, super valuable use case sort of waiting to be picked up. And then this idea of essentially using data as a form of collateral. So in the physical world, you might have piles and piles of gold bricks, and you say, okay, cool, we're going to now, you know, print money on the top of these gold bricks. But inside of this digital ecosystem, you know, you're taking something which actually, you know, is the digital collateral kind of equivalent in terms of it's digital by nature, it has intrinsic value, you know, that value can last over time. And obviously, if you have the ability to, you know, add to your store of data assets over time to increase that collateral, you know, kind of increase the money in the bank, so to speak, then, you know, you're able to kind of begin to produce more stability inside of that system. And you know, that in of itself is just a pretty fascinating kind of concept to all come together. So I was just wondering, in terms of the H2O stable asset and how it's designed at the moment, are there any sort of known weak points that you guys are aware of or sort of working on to mitigate at the moment?
Yeah, if I can quickly name one, I think Marek also already alluded to the point that we are moving towards multi-collateral backing of H2O. So I think what could be considered, let's say, a weak point is its overexposure currently to the volatility and the long-term trends of ocean. So yeah, for us it's very important to also diversify, right, or diversify our backing, and therefore create also more use cases. And not only that, but which I would not consider a weak point, but it's just a fact of the matter, is that the data economy in the Web3 is still very nascent. So it's a matter of time. We definitely believe in the strength of the ecosystem itself, but as of today, right now, I would say that kind of hinders adoption. But that's a trend overall in the space.
Yeah, and in terms of diversifying the collateral, is there anything that you are able to sort of talk about at this stage, or are those still sort of in the planning phase?
Well, you know, if I could jump in there, Sebastian, you know, what we're doing actually right now is actually super ambitious. And, you know, we love Ocean, you know, great protocol, you know, great ecosystem. So you've probably heard by now, right, that Ocean's going to be deploying like a VE Ocean, right, which is like, you know, voting escrow mechanics that's, you know, been popularized by protocols like probably most famously like Curve. Right, Balancer, sort of like others, right? You know, and it's actually really great token mechanics, token economics. And so like our sort of first foray into multiple assets is very likely to be creating a liquid staking wrapper for VE Ocean that we're going to be calling PSDN Ocean. And very likely that's the PSDN Ocean, the liquid staked wrapper is going to be the second collateral type. So that still has the benefit of, you know, keeping us very close to kind of what we're kind of already doing, but, you know, sort of just crossing that, what do they call it? Crossing the Rubicon, right? That's, I guess, the expression, right? To having multiple asset types, even though, you know, PSDN Ocean will be a derivative of Ocean, right? That's likely the plan. So,
correct.
Yeah.
And also eventually adding data to the basket as well, right?
So in terms of how long ago did H2O officially launch?
I think we launched in April, didn't we, Marek?
Yeah, that feels about right. Like, I mean, it feels like my heart, like it's been like a really like long journey, right? But it's only been April. So we had April, May, June, July, August. So about 6 months, right? So about half a year ago. Yeah, it's been a long and interesting ride.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, look, I mean, unfortunately, the timing wasn't maybe as good as it could have been. But how has the market responded so far in terms of, you know, how have people responded to the go live of H2O?
I would consider overall pretty positive. Although, as you mentioned when asking the question, the market conditions are really terrible, and has been since our launch. So we launched pretty much at the very start of the bear market and the whole Terra collapse. So extreme volatility in the markets also influenced, I think, our launch. But at the same time, let's see the positive side of things. We got the pleasure and the curse to battle test our mechanics very early and see how the protocol pretty much handles huge market drops. And we're happy to say that everything works as intended, and that we got to battle test the protocol very early. And for the people who are using it, I think it has been a pleasant journey as well, and we've seen also growth now with the introduction of H2O as a base token, and as more data is added to the marketplace, we're confident that we can only see more growth and adoption. So I think so far we are relatively happy with the results, and very anxious to keep on building. Is there anything you would like to add?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, most protocols like encounter some adversity, right, in their history. Pretty much us, like, you know, we like, it was just, you know, pretty much like clockwork, hey, Sebastian? Like, we launched, like, literally, like, days later, the market just dumped. And it was just, I remember we were on the phone, like quite often, right? It's like, wow, this is just relentless market, you know, like the entire crypto market. And, you know, like, stocks weren't doing well either. You know, it was just really, really a terrible time. So like Sebastian, I'm also hopeful that like the worst is, let's say, behind us, right? And maybe there'll be a bit of sideways action, but then I'm hopeful we get to sort of like up-only mode in crypto before long again.
Did you guys learn any significant kind of insights as a result of just confronting that onslaught so early?
I would say stay calm and move fast.
Yeah, I mean, running one of these protocols, everybody wants to launch a project, right? And crypto is like, oh, I'd love to launch a project. But like running a project is like an entirely sort of like different beast, right? It's like stories from that day, from those days. It's like a little bit like, you know, doing a sprint, right? And then like as soon as the sprint is done, now you start running a marathon. Right. Like, I don't think that that exists in the sports world because it sounds pretty like savage. Right. But like, that's literally kind of what it's like. And yeah, I mean, it's quite a bit of work to sort of manage and operate one of these protocols. Right. Like much like Reflexer does, there has to be like a lot of kind of like off chain processes that you know, have to be maintained. And it's a lot of curation. Right. I mean, especially like early days, you know, when a project launches, usually around project launch. That's sort of, I would say, like when a project's maybe like at its kind of like peak centralization, right? And then like things, you know, projects kind of tend to decentralize over time or take steps to decentralize over time. So, you know, I think it was especially maybe challenging, right? Kind of early on when there maybe weren't like a lot of adopters very early on, you know, to sort of just be those sort of few people that were working with the protocol. So, yeah, I think we just as a team, right? I think we learned to kind of like overcome, let's say, adversity, kind of like hang in there, right? Just through like just sheer grit, right? And just really hang in there, right? I mean, you know, crypto's great, comes and goes in cycles, but you know, the folks that, you know, are like kind of hang in and they, you know, they don't end up being tourists, right? And both me and Sebastian have been sort of at least through one market cycle before this, right? So like it's easier to stay calm once you realize that this is just sort of part of the cycle, right? Many other, I would say, stable assets, you know, maybe haven't fared so well. So like, I mean, I think that we're grateful and sort of like blessed that we managed to kind of like hang in there. And I think it's really a testament to the strength of the Ocean community, the Ocean ecosystem, but also like, I would say like the very strong Rye mechanics that we implement.
Yeah, well, I have to honestly commend your efforts, guys, because, you know, in terms of timing, it's one of, you basically launched in one of the hardest times, right? And to be able to pull through that, to still be working on this, to still be planning future releases and updates and all of those sorts of things, and sticking true to your gut in terms of how important this is and how much it needs to be built and come to life. Definitely, it's very admirable, and I think the fact that you guys are still here and still doing it it speaks a lot in terms of both the character of yourselves and then also your sort of commitment and dedication to the project.
You know, I think, you know, I don't want to put words in Sebastian's mouth, but I mean, we talk quite often, right? I think I would speak for him, you know, to say like, we are like just turbo bullish, right? Like data economy, data fi, and like, you know, just the bright future of this space.
I was just wondering if you guys could maybe touch on a couple of common misconceptions around H2O. I know I was pretty well versed on sort of the data economy and the Ocean ecosystem when I started learning about H2O, and I think that definitely helped me in terms of my understanding. But I was wondering if you guys could touch on some of the frequently or commonly asked questions that you get from people when they're first trying to wrap their head around what H2O is and how it sort of works.
Right. So yeah, as Marek explained earlier about the PID controller, right, and how it all functions, I think that has been a point of confusion for people who are not, as yourself, familiar with Rye, right? So the concept of a non-pegged stable assets and the comparison always going to other stable assets, and especially at the early days, there were a lot of concerns in how similar we are to the mechanics of Luna. So often we had to explain how different we actually are, and that we were not exposed to the same type of risks. So I think that has been up till now, I think, the main point of confusion at the non-pegged aspect of the protocol.
Yeah, and if someone doesn't have an understanding of what non-pegged is, I mean, even just kind of in itself, non-pegged stable asset is a bit of a head turner in itself, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, the idea of a target price is often a point of confusion, right?
Yeah. You know, moving the project forward. You mentioned obviously adding additional forms of collateral, adoption of the data market and the development of larger, more valuable data assets to also be used as collateral. Is there some other key obstacles that you guys are currently working through to get this thing up and running, or is that mostly the main ones?
So I think, yeah, those are mostly the main ones. So as you said, launching in extremely weird market conditions right at the beginning of a bear market. Also, as we mentioned earlier, we are at a very early days of the data economy in the Web3. So also adoption and all these things will come organically, we believe. So we don't see them much as an obstacle as for now. But yeah, I think we've touched on the main challenges for our protocol, and from now on forwards we just keep on building, and I think we have a beautiful road ahead.
Awesome. So in terms of that road ahead, is there a couple of things, you know, in 3 to 5 years, if you were to cast your mind forward and think in the ideal scenario where things would be with H2O, could you paint a bit of a picture for us of how that might look?
No, of course. So I think the big question is also, like, in 3 to 5 years, where will the data economy in the Web3 be, right? So we kind of build H2O with the idea and with the belief that the data economy has a really a multi-billion potential also in the Web3, as it also historically did for the Web2. We see this translates throughout time to the Web3. So from, let's say, 3 to 5 years from now, I think the whole space will be much more mature. And yeah, H2O thereby will be positioned as a dominant medium of exchange and unit of account for these data marketplaces. So we consider this integration of the ocean in the ocean marketplace as pretty much a starting point of this, and it's very nice to see how the whole DataFi ecosystem is kind of coming together with other protocols who are also big believers in the space and are pretty much paving the way for us to achieve that in the future, as you say, 3 to 5 years from now. So that's pretty much how I see it. I don't know, Marek, if you would like to give some words on how you see it.
Here's where I have to disagree with you, Sebastian. I don't think it's $1 billion,
It's a trillion dollars.
It's a trillion dollar opportunity.
Trillion dollars.
With a capital T.
But in Europe, we don't use trillions, right?
Really? You say they want 1,000 billion?
Do we use trillions? Yeah, it could be. Anyway, my mistake. Trillions it is.
Okay.
Yeah, I take it back. Yeah, trillions it is.
I mean, you know, back when I was a data scientist, was when I first got sort of like, let's say, I don't know what the right kind of pill is, right? But when the first time I got like pilled on this, concept, it was actually a report that came out of some thinkers in data from MIT. Sandy Pentland, wrote a report, helped co-write a report for the World Economic Forum about this concept. That's sort of where I learned about, data as an asset class. I think this report, it's pretty old. So, from around like 2010, 2011, and it definitely started talking about this concept of data as an asset class as like a $1 trillion opportunity. So like in 3 to 5 years, I'm convinced that we're going to be well down the path to sort of realizing this stuff, right? I think, governments, I think, especially in Europe, right, are taking steps to, move regulations forward, right? Starting with GDPR, there's been other regulations since then. Like, I'm not a lawyer or like a, regulatory buff, right? But I just sort of see things, moving in the direction of giving people more rights over their data, right? And more rights to like monetize their data, right? Where I think the status quo, I think still to this day, right, is that people implicitly pay for a lot of the quote unquote free services that we enjoy, right? Like Instagram, and maybe Twitter, LinkedIn, other services, right? Which people don't pay for those, but they kind of implicitly pay for those things with their data, right? And I think that what it's probably going to, I sort of see a path to this, right, in the coming years, would be to make those sort of, economic relationships just simply more explicit, right? Instead of being buried into like 150 page terms of service, right? Like the, what data tokenization, the kind of things that Ocean's been building over the last few years are going to actually enable, those transactions to be much more explicit, right? And let ordinary people sort of take advantage and monetize those.
So if you have this concept of this kind of shared back end with all of this data moving around, and if Ocean is helping to facilitate the that sort of exchange of data, then H2O can essentially be the substrate, which is the stable medium of exchange to help facilitate the economic exchange of those transactions, yeah?
Yeah, that's certainly one side of it. And the other side of it is that, you know, once people are able to sort of like tokenize their own data and you know, sort of like take ownership of it, so to speak, you know, they're going to probably want to use it in different, you know, like essentially use it in DataFi, right? Which is sort of like the next evolution, I would say, of decentralized finance, right? It's going to be finance that is essentially data backed. And that's really the future that we're building towards.
Very interesting. So in terms of that future, what's coming up next on H2O's roadmap?
As you might be aware, like I believe last week or the week before that, we launched our roadmap V2. So as a consequence of, as Marek also mentioned earlier, the Ocean coming up. So the VE model, as Marek mentioned, popularized by Curve, allows for several plays, right? So the opportunity that we saw is to build BSDN Ocean, which is basically like a liquid staking wrapper for VE Ocean, right? This is good for Ocean protocol as it pretty much locks up the liquidity, the Ocean. So we users can pretty much, so Ocean holders can log their tokens interacting with the PSDN Ocean contract, right? Which will then in turn lock Ocean in VE Ocean for the maximum period of time, right? As a token of confidence to the protocol. So it's pretty much comparable to the Curve Convex play that we're doing. So then PSDN holders, PSDN Ocean holder will be able then to stake and get a share of the revenue generated by data farming and locking VE Ocean. So this generates basically an opportunity for real yields and a more sustainable model for H2O itself. It also creates the possibility for PSDN holder, right, to have the ability to pretty much choose where this liquidity, so the VE Ocean will be allocated, right? So this pretty much adds this DeFi primitive layer to the DataFi economy, creating opportunities for this whole new layer of DeFi plays, right? Then further down the line, as we previously mentioned, we are looking into adding, so modifying our code base to add multiple assets capabilities, right? Which then of course will allow for users to mint H2O using PSDN Ocean to start with, and also other forms of collateral in the future throughout 2023. So yeah, a lot going on there for the coming months and also for the coming year, and keeping our eyes on our main mission that we hope to achieve by the end of 2023, which is to become to also add data as an asset as a form of collateral for H2O. So only big plans ahead. So yeah, this pretty much adds a lot of utility for H2O and PSDN users in the very near future. So a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, very cool. And for people listening, how would they be able to get more involved and sort of get more active inside of the H2O ecosystem?
Right. So first of all, get in touch with us, you can join all our socials. So Twitter, Discord, Telegram. You can find us under H2O Data. And if you want to know more about what I previously discussed of our new roadmap, check us out on Medium, also H2O Data, and learn more about the protocol. So you can find all the info there, and we regularly post new updates and stuff.
Great. I'll make sure to add links to all those in the show notes as well, so you can check them out. Is there anything else that you guys would like to add?
I'm looking forward to doing this again once we're able to add multi-collateral and you know, we see the, you know, data economy unfold, and it'd be great to do like a retrospective sometime in the future.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love that. There's a lot happening. You know, there's a lot of pretty significant developments as well on the roadmap for you guys. So yeah, it's going to be cool to see this all come together. And look, that need for a, you know, non-peg stable asset inside this ecosystem is just so important. And you guys are basically one of the very few people in the world working on something that is this sort of novel and interesting in the space. So yeah, you know, huge appreciation to you guys and everything that you're doing, and looking forward to seeing it all come to life.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to the Ocean Missions Campfire Podcast. As you may be aware, this is a relatively new show and we are looking for feedback and wanting to make it awesome. So if you have any thoughts or feedback that you'd like to share, please just send us an email to info@oceanmissions.com. That's info@oceanmissions.com. Thanks for listening.